It's time for All Things Northwest with Northwest Missouri State University President Dr. John Jasinski. Each month, Dr. Jasinski visits with community and educational leaders about exciting developments and collaborations happening throughout our region. Support for All Things Northwest comes from Family Eye Clinic in Maryville. Dr. Drew Garwood offers patients eye exams, diagnosis, and treatment of eye injuries, as well as glasses and contact lenses.
Welcome to this month's edition of All Things Northwest, a show devoted to all the good about the people, places, events, and stories of our region. My name is Sam Mason, host of KXCV KRNW Spotlight on Industry program, and I'll be filling in for Dr. John Jasinski this month. This program highlights the great work, great play, the collaboration, and the developments throughout our region. And please know, there is much to celebrate. We here at Northwest Missouri State University and your public radio partners, KXCV, KRNW, hope you're enjoying this wonderful month of May with commencements, end of school terms, and plans of summer vacations. I'm pleased to welcome you to the May edition of our show. We'll provide two segments this month. In segment one, we feature Randy Arndt of the Nature Conservancy and Grand River Grasslands site manager of Dunn Ranch. In segment two, we feature Dr. Joyce Piverell, Northwest Missouri State University's Dean of Education and Human Services. Thanks for joining the All Things Northwest team, and we hope you enjoy this month's edition. To begin, I welcome Randy Arndt, site manager of Dunn Ranch. Randy, welcome to All Things Northwest.
Thank you very much.
Well, before I get into the questions, let me first tell our listeners a little bit about you. Randy holds both bachelor's and master's degrees in natural resources from Ohio State University. He spent 29 years working as a wildlife biologist for the Missouri Department of Conservation and celebrated his retirement in 2007. Retirement didn't seem to last long as he currently works for the Nature Conservancy and from 2007 to present has served as the Grand River Grasslands Site Manager, which is located at Dunn Ranch in northern Harrison County. He lives in Albany with his wife and has three grown children.
Correct.
All right. Once again, Randy, welcome to All Things Northwest.
Thank you very much.
So let's jump right into this. What is the Nature Conservancy?
Well, the Nature Conservancy is a private, nonprofit conservation organization. A lot of people get us confused with the Missouri Department of Conservation. However, we're not a government agency. All of our funding comes from private donations and grants. The mission of the Nature Conservancy is to preserve the lands and waters on which all life depends. The Nature Conservancy is a science-based organization. All of our work is based on sound conservation science. The Nature Conservancy is also a global organization. In fact, the Nature Conservancy is the largest private, nonprofit conservation organization in the world. We have offices located in 35 countries, and we work in 69 countries around the world. In the United States, we have offices and chapters in all 50 states. On a more local level here in Missouri, our work is mainly focused in three regions of the state. In southwest Missouri, our work is focused on forest land and freshwater issues of the streams and rivers in the Ozarks, such as the Current River. In southwest Missouri, we focus our work on protecting and restoring prairies, and again, in freshwater issues. But instead of the Current River in southwest Missouri, we're working with the Elk River watershed. And then in northwest Missouri, that's our third focal area where we work in what we call the Grand River Grasslands, where the Dunn Ranch is located. And then there we focus on prairie restoration and grassland ecosystems.
Okay, so tell me just a little bit more about the Grand River Grasslands.
Well, the Grand River Grasslands is a 154,000 acre landscape that straddles the Iowa and Missouri border, located in northern Harrison County, Missouri, and southern Ringgold County, Iowa, about 8 miles west of I-35. The vision that we have for the Grand River Grasslands, the vision that the Nature Conservancy has, is to create a functional grassland ecosystem with all the ecological processes that were associated with the original tallgrass prairie. So how that looks on the ground is we envision these core areas of such as Dunn Ranch in Missouri and the Kellerton Bird Conservation Area in southern Iowa, the core areas that have high diversity, high quality prairie embedded in a working landscape of private grassland so that in the aggregate they provide suitable habitat for area dependent grassland birds and wildlife. Then before the Nature Conservancy purchased the Grand River grasslands, land inventory analysis indicated that there was no other place in the entire central tallgrass prairie ecosystem, which spans six states in the central United States, no other site in that entire region that provided a better opportunity to restore a functional grassland ecosystem than the Grand River grasslands. So that's basically why we're working there. And then other conservation organizations also recognize the importance of the Grand River grasslands as well. There's the United States, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, the Iowa Department of Natural Resources, the Missouri Department of Conservation, and the Nature Conservancy, as well as the Natural Resources Conservation Service have all recognized the Grand River grasslands as a priority area because of the importance of the grasslands as a grassland ecosystem.
So let's talk about that a little bit. Why is it important to restore this natural prairie?
Well, it's really important. For one thing, temperate grasslands, including Missouri's tallgrass prairie, are critically imperiled worldwide. Temperate grasslands occupy the least amount of area and are the least protected of all the habitat types globally. Less than 5% of the temperate grasslands worldwide are effectively conserved. In North America, less than 4% of the original 400,000 square miles of tallgrass prairie still remains. Historically, more than a third of Missouri and more than 85% of Iowa was covered by prairie. Today, sadly, less than 1% of the prairie in Missouri and less than 0.1% of the prairie in Iowa still remains. So anything that we can do to preserve or restore the grasslands and the tallgrass prairie is important.
Let's talk a little bit about the Dunn Ranch itself. What are some of the things going on at the Dunn Ranch aside from the tallgrass prairie restoration?
Well, of course, probably the main thing going on at Dunn Ranch is our tallgrass prairie restoration. Since 2007, we've replanted more than 2,500 acres of tallgrass prairie. We collect and clean all of our own seed, and our plantings generally consist of more than, well, between 150 and 200 species of native plants. So they're very diverse. And of course, we have a remnant flock of prairie chickens at Dunn Ranch, so that provides viewing opportunities for the public. It also is only one of two populations that are found in Missouri. The other is southwest Missouri in the El Dorado Springs area.
Is that an animal that's on the endangered species list?
No, it's, I guess it would be considered threatened in the state of Missouri and Iowa. However, there are still huntable populations of prairie chickens in Nebraska, South Dakota, and northern Kansas. So, no, they're not endangered. Of course, we also have bison at Dunn Ranch. We have a herd of 112 head of bison right now. The origin of those bison come from Wind Cave. And like I said, we have 112, and the interesting thing going on right now is we're just entering our calving season. We've had our first two calves, and in the next two or three weeks, we expect to have as many as 46 baby calves on the ground, which again provides a lot of excitement for people coming to look at the prairie and see the bison. Another thing, and probably one of the main things that goes on at Dunn Ranch, is research. It's a tremendous outdoor laboratory for universities. We're working with, I think, six or seven different universities: Iowa State University, William Penn University, University of Missouri, Washington University, Syracuse University from New York, the University of Illinois at Urbana. we'd love to get involved with Northwest Missouri State, get them interested, and I think there is a professor that has contacted me. But the research there goes from everywhere from tracking bison and prairie chickens with GPS collars all the way up to the effects that our prairie restoration has on pollinators such as butterflies and bees. And we have one of our staff, our permanent staff, Hillary Haley, who's also a graduate student at Iowa State University, is studying the bees, the native bees at Dunn Ranch, and the impact that our restoration is having on those bees. And in the last 2 years, during her field season, she's collected more than 110 species of native bees at Dunn Ranch. Four of those species have never been found in the state before. All four of those were found at Dunn Ranch. And there's also one species that they're still studying that they can't identify at this point, and they think may be a new species that's yet to be identified. So we have a lot of interesting research going on there.
And those are all natural swarms of bees that are around the area?
Those are all native bees, yes. All the way from little sweat bees up to the big bumblebees that you see.
Mm-hmm. And is Dunn Ranch open to the public?
Sure. We invite the public to come to Dunn Ranch. A lot of people come to, you know, enjoy the diversity of the plants. We get a lot of bird watchers. We don't have any, at this time, developed trails at Dunn Ranch. However, we have field roads that we keep mowed that, you know, act as walking trails. People are more than welcome to come and walk those trails and look at the plants and birds. All we ask is that they do not go into our bison pasture. The perimeter of that is marked with fences. We also have an event coming up June 24th and 25th, which we call our Prairie Days. This will be the second annual Prairie Day. That event will happen Friday evening. And that evening, what we do is people can gather, and we, at our office headquarters, we have a big old white barn, and we show nature films on the end of the, project them on the end of that barn. So people are sitting around after dark on lawn chairs, watching movies under the stars on the prairie, which is really something to participate in. We offer camping there that evening if people want to camp. Then the next day, it's a day-long event. We hold tours of the bison all day. We'll take a trailer out into the pasture where people can get right up close to the bison. We'll have a food vendor there to serve a meal at lunch. The Conservation Department is a partner in that project, along with the Missouri Prairie Foundation. And there's different activities going on. They walk to identify flowers, walk to identify pollinators, just different things like that going on all day.
Can people actually walk on the prairie, or do you try to keep people off of that prairie land?
No, they're welcome to explore the prairie. That's really the only way to really experience the diversity of the prairie is to get out and walk through it, because there's more than 350 species of plants there.
And as we start to wrap things up here, what are some of the final things you'd like for people to know about Dunn Ranch?
Well, I think if I had one message I'd like to leave people with, I think it would be that temperate grasslands, and in particular the tallgrass prairies of Missouri, are critically endangered. It's the most endangered habitat type worldwide, like I said. Anything that we can do to preserve, to restore the prairies is important. The grasslands play a vital role in that they reduce soil erosion, they improve water quality, they help sequester carbon, they provide habitat for a wide range of grassland wildlife, birds, pollinators, and who knows how important they might be as we face an uncertain future with climate change.
Well, Randy, thank you very much. Appreciate you coming in today.
You're welcome.
That's Randy Arndt, site manager of Dunn Ranch, speaking about the Nature Conservancy's Grand River Grasslands and the importance of preserving and restoring Missouri's tall grass prairie. When we return to All Things Northwest, we'll visit with Northwest Missouri State University's Dr. Joyce Piverell, Dean of the College of Education and Human Services. You're listening to All Things Northwest on KXCV Maryville, KRNW Chillicothe. ¶¶
Support for KXCV KRNW comes from Family Eye Clinic in Maryville. Dr. Drew Garwood offers patients eye exams, diagnosis, and treatment of eye injuries, as well as glasses and contact lenses. More information is available online at familyeyeclinic.net or at 660-582-5222.
Welcome back to the May edition of All Things Northwest. I'm your host this month, Sam Mason. We'll now visit with Dr. Joyce Piverell. Good morning, Dr. Piverell, and welcome to All Things Northwest.
Good morning.
Well, Joyce Wake Piverell came to Northwest as a student in 1966 and graduated with a degree in vocational home economics. She began her teaching career at Fillmore C1 in 1970 and finished her career in secondary education in 2000 as a central high school administrator in the St. Joseph School District. Joyce has both her master's and specialist degrees in administration from Northwest, and as you can tell, she's always had strong ties to the university as she returned as a member of our Northwest staff in 2000. At Northwest, she's been a faculty member, chair of the Educational Leadership Department, and will end her service as Dean of the College of Education and Human Services in 2016. After 45 years of serving our region as an educator, she'll transition to reading, painting, gardening, and enjoying her grandchildren and her family. So congratulations on your upcoming retirement.
Thank you for that, Sam, and thank you for that introduction as well.
Absolutely. Well, let's kind of jump right into it. So how has the nature of teacher education changed since you started in the field?
I'm going to talk a little bit about our new School of Education and introduce that on the radio program today, because I think that leads us into our next discussion about profession-based education.
Absolutely.
Our school districts and our public today are asking for classroom-ready teachers. And so as we look at that, that's what the profession of education is all about. How do we prepare our teachers and our school leaders to be ready to take the job day one? And so that's where we're going to with our new School of Education, so that our student teachers are career-ready, classroom-ready, and we've expanded our field experiences to meet that need out in the field. And so I'll talk a little bit about that as we go through the other points I want to make today. Horseman and Leet Center are really highlights for us here at Northwest. We're one of two state university campuses which have a lab school on site, and our students, our teacher candidates and others, talk about being in the classroom early and often for that training. So that's a big plus that we have here at Northwest.
So tell me a little bit about the changes that are taking place at not just the state and local levels, but also on a national level.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to take us back through history just a little bit to talk about education errors. Mm-hmm. In 1965, we had the Education and Secondary Education Act, and that was at the national level to talk about how do we make sure our students are getting what they need in our public schools, and how do we prepare the teachers for those schools. And so that was the beginning of several eras that we go through in education. In the 1980s, we had the Nation at Risk, which talked about our students not being able to be competitive with other nations as far as testing. I think the space race gave a lot of focus to education and making sure we support the math and science areas in education and that we're leaders in the world in those areas. So we had that, and then we had No Child Left Behind, which talked about highly qualified teachers. And the No Child Left Behind Act really put the focus on teacher qualifications. And so we've been through that wave as we change in education to prepare our teachers. And now we have the Every Student Succeeds Act, and that's the new act that just came out, and they talk about appropriately certified teachers. So they're getting back to learner outcomes. It's not just about the teacher any longer, but it's about, are we sure our students are performing and achieving at the levels they need to achieve within our classrooms? And so they're focusing on outcomes, I think, and that's been a part of the public movement, too, to make sure that we have that accountability piece, that we do not leave children behind, and that we have our teachers working with every child in the classroom. So it's a little bit in history. You look at the post-war classrooms that we had, they were set up around the industrial model that we have 30 students in a classroom and we try to prepare all 30. But then we started looking at there's a range of students in that classroom and their abilities. And today we're focusing on how do we work with each child to bring them up to that level. And I think we're making great strides within those movements that we've made.
So from what you've told me, there have been a lot of changes over the last 50 years, really, in teacher education. So what do you think is the most meaningful to our regional schools and to these teacher mm-hmm. candidates?
I think most of the administrators or people in our regional schools would talk about a teacher that's passionate about what she does and a teacher that cares about the students in the classroom. And those two things are vitally important as you work with students to individualize really for their achievement. And so I think those things have been instrumental, but we keep looking for ways to sort and rank people. And so we have new testing on our state level and new standards. And you look at our students now, they'll need to pass a general education assessment test, and they've done that in the past. Our teacher candidates, they've done that in the past. But we've added to that not only content exit exam, which really talks about their expertise and their knowledge area, but we put a performance piece with that in the state of Missouri. So they'll do a performance assessment as well. And so they'll be assessed about how they perform out in their student teaching experiences. And also the school partners will help us assess our teacher candidates and give us feedback so that we're making sure they're classroom ready when they go out from Northwest.
There's been a lot of changes just in the last week or so within the state of Missouri, moving away from Common Core. What's your take on that?
That's right. And there's been a great deal of not only national but state discussion around that and pushback. I think part of the support or the genesis of that has been that people see that as maybe something negative and not being able to really at the local level have some say-so on what their children are doing in the classroom or what they want them to know and be able to do when they graduate. And our schools were set up to be really administered from the local level. So I think there's been some of that pushback. I think the content and the broadness of the standards are great for following something as we transition from state to state. If you move or there are other, I think those things are good. I think there are issues in combination with knowing what locally our children need and need to be able to do. And so I think there's a tension between that, and I would like to see that resolved in some way. I think Missouri has been instrumental in making sure we have some of that control and that we're preparing our students the way we want them to prepared.
And so what are some of the gaps and the challenges that you see in our education system right now?
Well, I think some of the gaps, and I think most everyone would be able to identify some of the gaps. We look at the P-12 students, and again, we're focusing on our P-12 students being career and college ready, and we hear a lot of talk from the parents who send their students to college about having to take remedial courses and that sort of thing. And so I think that within the gaps, there may be some gaps in the math and science areas and maybe other specific areas where students maybe aren't getting the background, or maybe we have to take them where they are and move them forward in the background they need when they get to higher education. And so I think some of those things have been really challenges for us and gaps. And we also know that there's socioeconomic differences. When we look at our students in the classroom, they may come from a school that maybe had maybe didn't have as many resources, or from homes that didn't have as many resources. And so we need to supplant those resources by making sure in our classrooms that our teachers are ready to do that and ready to take the students to the next level or supply the students with those resources. So I think as we look at the rural and urban areas, those are the places that we see that the achievement gaps are widened by these socioeconomic conditions. And so I think those are some of our challenges. Access to resources and getting the students prepared when we take them and commit to them.
And so what can we do here at Northwest to help address those gaps?
Mm-hmm. I think part of what we see here at Northwest, and we work very well with our partner schools, both in the urban areas and here in the Northwest region. We look at preparing our teachers with the skills that they need to take the students from where they are to move them to the next level and help them achieve. I know here, too, one of our major partners with the school districts is our regional professional development center that's here on campus. And Becky Baldwin and her staff do a lot with taking the teachers once they're out in the classroom and helping diagnose student achievement needs within those classrooms for our schools here in the Northwest region. So I think we're doing some things there that strengthen our partnerships. And I think the close relationships that we have with our school districts to put teacher candidates out in the field and have good practical experiences, they do their student teaching or their other experiences that we put out in the field. So I know that that's been one of the national movements, too, is to give them more experience in the field. And so we're doing that with our new education redesign is helping us do that. So with our education redesign, we took the outcomes that we want our students, our candidates to know and be able to do, and did our planning backward from that. And so we're doing some things where they'll have instruction in the classroom or learn about learning theories and those things, and then they'll be able to practice them right away so that they are able to integrate those within their knowledge and skills as they graduate from us.
And that's the Emilio Reggio program, is that correct?
Well,
or is that separate from what you're talking about?
That's a philosophy, and again, our students were able to travel to Italy to look at that philosophy in action in their school, where it originated. And so that school is all about constructivist learning. It's the children help construct the curriculum and then construct what they'll learn. And as you look at children up to the time we put them in school, that's how they're learning. It's very fascinating to see children learn and learn at a fast-paced rate, and when we get them in seats in school and say sit down and be quiet, their learning maybe gets squashed. And so we're looking at integrating that in our LEAD Center. It's been the philosophy for the last several years, but we're also strengthening that through our students' travel to Reggio Emilia.
And are other schools throughout the region and throughout the state and even the nation making that transition to that sort of model?
There are some that are and some that aren't. Again, it takes that integrated philosophy within your working and your skill set to be able to implement that within the classroom. I think some people see it as, the children just do whatever they want to do. And as you see it in action, it really is helping them construct the knowledge, but giving them parameters and guiding them through that curriculum so that they are getting what they need from it. But it also is very engaging for the students if you look at them. If they're able to take their interest and pair it with what they're learning in the classroom, it keeps them much more engaged in their learning.
So we have a long history of excellence in teacher education here at mm-hmm. Northwest Missouri State. So how would you describe how you fit into that proud history?
I hope I fit very well into the proud history. I've been at this quite a few years, and as I worked in the high schools as an administrator, one of my loves was to help teachers develop as they were in the field. And so I brought that love, I hope, to Northwest and looking at how can we develop teachers and administrators that really are focused on the student-centered learning that's happening in the classroom and how can we promote that and how can we make that better. So that's been my focus as I've been here at Northwest, and that was my focus when I began in teaching as well.
So as we wrap things up here, as you transition from Northwest, what's next on the horizon for you?
I appreciate that question, and I'm not sure I know everything. I hope to do some of the things that I really enjoy, really spending time with family, my grandchildren. They live a ways away, so I'm not always able to go to their activities and things, and I hope to do that more. I hope to travel. I enjoy reading a good book, so I hope I can do more of that. I've been reading professional journals and manuals for quite a while, and I just look forward to maybe enjoying those books a little bit more, and I enjoy painting as well, so I hope to do some of the activities that I really look forward to doing in my retirement.
Dr. Joyce Piverell, thank you for being a guest on the program today. And more importantly, thank you for your years of service in the teaching field and for your service to Northwest Missouri State University. And most importantly, best of luck to you in your retirement.
Thank you, Sam. I appreciate that. I look forward to hearing about Northwest. I know you'll maintain the things that have always been a good part of Northwest and training teachers. So thank you for that.
Well, we'll be in touch and you know where to find us. And that's a wrap for this month's show. All Things Northwest is a program devoted to all the good about the people, places, events, and stories of our region. We'd like to thank our guests, Randy Arndt of the Nature Conservancy and Grand River Grasslands Site Manager of Dunn Ranch, and Northwest Missouri State University's Dr. Joyce Piverell, University Dean of the College of Education and Human Services. Thanks, too, to our producer, Brandon Travis, a student here at Northwest Missouri State University, along with KXCV General Manager Rodney Harris. Friends, take good care, treat each other well, provide good works for others, and keep celebrating and advancing our region. I'm Sam Mason, and thank you for your support of All Things Northwest, Northwest Missouri State University, KXCV, KRNW, and Public Radio.
Support for All Things Northwest comes from Family Eye Clinic. More information is available online at familyeyeclinic.net or at 660-582-5222. Theme music for the program was composed by Northwest Professor Dr. William Richardson. The music was recorded by Vocal Music Education major Jordan Andrews, piano, Music major Daniel Bates, bass, Audio and Production major Mark Ludwig, drums, and Dr. William Richardson, trumpet. The program is produced by Broadcast Production major Brandon Travis. Join us again next month for All Things Northwest.